Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat the corporate giant. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology, a slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I'm a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I'm also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliath, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business. A strategy can take it global. It's episode 32, and it is a mastermind interview episode, and I am interviewing Michael Campbell, the founder and CEO of Black on Purpose TV, BOP TV. BOP TV has over 8,000 pieces of content across 24 channels and are viewed by over 1.5 million viewers daily around the globe, and has grown to become the largest African-American-owned streaming network in the world. Why are we interviewing Michael? Because Michael's using platforms that already exist to reach millions of listeners and viewers. Apple TV, Roku TV, and other digital streaming platforms that already exist, he's built his TV streaming service on that backbone and is reaching millions daily. That's what I call a guerrillapreneur. And you're going to love this interview because, like the name of his company, Michael is Black on Purpose. Here's my interview with Michael Campbell. Okay, guerrillapreneurs, welcome to the podcast. We have a very exciting mastermind interview with the founder of Black on Purpose TV, Michael Campbell. And Black on Purpose is a statement in and of itself. When you hear it, but when you connect it to TV and media in this digital age, it makes a double statement. So we're really excited to talk to you about your business, your strategy, and everything that you want Black on Purpose TV to be. But before we jump into that, we want to learn a little bit more about you. What inspired you to launch a network?
My career started in the music business. I was a music producer, still do, but I play several instruments. Buzz kind of happened at a talent show in school, junior high school, and the bug never bit, and I've been in the entertainment business ever since. But during that journey, I saw that there were some needs, and I saw there were some voids. And particularly when it came to content and things that we create. And I wanted to be able to do something to make a difference that would also allow for growth and expansion as well. That was very important to me.
What kind of gaps did you see? Was it just a certain type of content, no content at all as it related to Black people? Or what was the gap that you saw when it hit you that something needed to change?
The gap was in the images that we see, and those images being positive and being accurate images of people of color. As you know, we've struggled with that from the very onset of film and the very onset of television, just having our images created and shown in a proper way.
In college, I did a thesis on that and saw the impact that a single negative image had and how many positive images it took to overcome that one negative image.
Yeah.
And then I had a journal and just went through and tried to find how many of each I could locate in an hour's worth of television. Mm-hmm. And it amazed me.
Oh, yes.
Overwhelming number of negative presentations, particularly of Black men, on TV. And then I saw it real life when I traveled abroad to places in Asia.
Yes.
And that's how young kids greeted me, based on the stereotypes they saw on television there in their country. So yes. You're absolutely right. So you saw that coming out of your background of music producing, mm-hmm. and just observing media, and saw this huge gap.
And, you know, as you know, there have been a lot of people that have complained about those images. There have been controversies about the Oscars, about Grammy Awards, about all these different things. But it seems to be the method seems to mostly be, let's try to get other people to have a change of heart. Let's try to get them to do that. But we've been doing that for a long time. And I take a different approach to it, and that's an approach of self-empowerment, of entrepreneurship, to be able to, one of the key things we learn is find the need and fill it. And so this is a need whose time has certainly come. And I felt like it was my job to fill that need.
I don't think the civil rights movement reaches its crescendo without black media, black mm-hmm. newspaper, black magazines that were able to cover the stories in detail that many mainstream papers refused to cover until the stories became apparent.
Yes.
So I agree with you. There needs to be independent press. There needs to be independent black press. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a voice that puts a face to the problems that we're seeing in all communities, and particularly the black community.
Absolutely. You know, we're a very creative people by nature. When we create something, the problem is we then say, now what? And so Black on Purpose Television answers the question of now what? So whether they are a business and they want to be seen in front of black consumers and be a part of that $1.4 trillion spend, or whether it's a musician, a content creator that wants to get their product seen and is tired of waiting on that long line of opportunity only to get turned away. So it's really kind of a cross between a Black Wall Street move, an entrepreneurial move, but a guerrilla move in making your way through rather than staying on the line. Because, you know, there's only so many seats at the table. There's always been just a few. Maybe you could say two more have opened up since right. the 60s. But the problem is the line is from here to Los Angeles. And what do we do about all of those talented people? Do we let them fall by the wayside? We don't know. The next genius could be emerging, but he never gets that opportunity. So rather than continuously ask for permission, ask for okay, we can make our own platform. And those that still want to deal in that old mainstream model can continue to do so.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And I love that gorilla, because the Gorillapreneur podcast, that's what we preach, is to take advantage of excess capacity, existing infrastructure, sharing economies, gig economies, anything that you can leverage to launch a business and gain scale without having to make significant capital investments.
Yeah.
So with that said, let's talk about Bob. Let's talk about the platform and what you've built and how it's changing, like other digital platforms, the way people consume content.
So we began in 2013. I developed this idea probably in 2008, 2009, when I started to look at people wanting to be a part of something, people wanting to get quote-unquote put on, right? And so they try with their music, with whatever they do, only to get shut out because there's only so much room. So I said, well, why don't we make our own table? And we can have a seat at our own table, and then we don't have to worry about room. We create the depth and the breadth of what we create, right? And so because we spend a lot of time and a lot of energy trying to break through in a system that really is not receptive to us being there. So rather than do that, it's better for us to do our own, right?
Right.
And that's what Black on Purpose is about. It is about empowerment. It's about developing the next wave of artists, content creators, growing business. Because a lot of African-American businesses and black businesses worldwide do not advertise a lot on television. Largely it's cost, but also you're kind of wasting money on people that probably would not buy from you statistically. So if I give you a platform where you can market directly to your people, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. Some, you know, we have Asian channels, we have Latino channels that market directly to their market, to serve that market. It's funny how, though, when we say it's a black channel or it's black on purpose, that there's some problem with that. Like, everyone else is free to create, to enjoy, to earn money. But the minute we want to do that, there seems to be a problem with that. And also, in some respects, I feel like I do the industry a favor. I do them a favor by providing an outlet for people that they probably would not want to deal with in the first place.
Interesting point of view. Because I think you hit on a couple of things that may make people want to fight. $1.5 trillion is worth fighting for. Right now, it is being freely given over without competition to players that don't necessarily reinvest in the communities where that $1.5 trillion comes from.
Well, Nielsen did a study that said that African Americans watch more TV than anyone else. The study further went on to say that African Americans buy more things off of television than anyone else. So if we use that as truth, which everyone honors Nielsen, right?
Right.
Why are the commercials not reflecting the people that watch more TV and that buy more TV? That would only be good business sense. I wouldn't make an English commercial for a crowd of people that's all Italian, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is the control of the images that you see and what does that look like. So the people that tell you that something is the best detergent or the best water or the best thing and they don't look like you, you begin to feel that that's a person of authority. And that's where this problem begins with. So it's about entrepreneurship. It's about self-empowerment. It's about providing positive images for our children, right? When they have the doll test and they choose the white doll over the black doll, that is through programming in so many different ways. We have an opportunity to change that. And I hope that with the television network, we can do that.
And the entrepreneurship message is a powerful one. And from a strategic perspective, what you just laid out creates such a huge opportunity for your platform. Blacks watch the most TV. They buy more from what they see on TV. And if you take it one step further, there are studies that show Blacks make those purchases at a higher rate on their mobile devices.
Yes.
So the entire digital workflow or purchase stream is in favor of Black consumers if you can figure out a way to harness it. And what you just laid out, saying that you've now created an audience for Black businesses where they're going to maximize the spend. Yeah. Because they're going to have a greater share of people in one spot that are going to more likely be attracted to the goods and services of those businesses.
Absolutely.
And since the first time we met, I've been telling so many people about you. There's a young lady on the podcast, Akizi Stokes. She has a business called Wonder Grubs, which makes cookies out of mealworms, out of grubs. Wow. And I told her, her biggest audience is going to be international first.
Yes.
And she's like, well, how do I reach them? I said, Black on Purpose TV. And I said, that's you'll get a better spin because you'll get a greater concentration of the people that are more likely to buy that product.
Absolutely.
And bypassing the traditional big networks.
Yes.
So there are some tremendous entrepreneurial plays. Mm-hmm. And then, like you say, on top of that, you get the social benefit, which is so exciting to me, to be programmed and then reprogrammed with content that looks like me.
Now, those content creators that create that content, there's also revenue stream because the top 10 content creators from each channel actually split a percentage of the advertising dollars. So they're able to make money, and that's important too. So now you have a young man, he might be a new father. You might have a young woman who is now a mother. What is she going to do? Now she can do something that makes a difference, something creative, and she can earn her own way by doing a skill set that she really loves. And that's important for right. empowering our community as well.
Right. So let me unpack that a little bit more so people really understand how they can work with you to build this business and create a revenue stream. Mm-hmm. There are people who are getting kicked off YouTube right now.
Yes.
They can come to you.
Yes.
They can bring that content and market it on your platform.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get the most eyeballs.
Yes.
They're in the top 10 in their category.
Yes.
They split the revenue.
Absolutely. And make more than they would make with YouTube.
Wow. And can you say
more.
That again?
And make more than YouTube.
So tell us how that model works.
So what happens is I was speaking with, we're formulating, and we've been working on this for a while, BOP TV Africa. So BOP TV Africa is just another outlet for people in Africa to have access to BOP TV, create content for BOP TV. And we had a gentleman on there who's a producer, and he got like 87,000 hits on something he did on YouTube. And he got a check that was like $11 and change. So we just quickly did the math, right? And he would have made a lot more money with us. YouTube and Facebook are censoring content that is truthful content,
mm-hmm.
positive content, and they're now trying to figure out ways to control the narrative and to control that message. Because if you look at YouTube and look at Facebook in particular, you can kind of see trends of how people are thinking. And people of color are becoming more and more aware than ever before through this information age. And so you'll see something and say, wow, that was pretty deep. Wow, that was interesting. You know,
right.
It just shows you where young people are really going and older people.
Right, right. Now, I think you're absolutely spot on with the digital censorship that is starting to creep into every aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks ago, Reverend Sharpton mentioned that one of his colleagues had just published a book with a title that was similar to Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And he took actual footage from CNN, MSNBC, and the other networks around the events that kind of catapulted that movement
mm-hmm.
as a way to promote the book.
Sure.
Never made it onto YouTube.
Wow.
It was sent back to him for re-editing because it was described as content that would create controversy or spark social unrest. And so this gentleman had to go back and start over, even though he was putting out content that was broadcast by mainstream media.
It's interesting how a platform can determine what is appropriate and what is not, when really they should just be a platform to allow for the distribution of anything. So it's interesting how now they're becoming some kind of moral watchdogs on what's being created. There's a lot of non-black hate-filled material and organizations, etc., that exist on both Facebook and YouTube, and who talk openly and who are allowed to. So, you know, but again, it is all the more reason why we need to have our own. They used to have areas that they would say were for white only or black only. And let's say one room is whites only, one room is blacks only. They're both rooms. There's nothing better about being in one room than another room.
Mm.
But we bought into that. We bought into that. There's something special about one room than another room. And it's really not true. They're both rooms. And we gave up our room to be in the other room. And it's going to be very, very difficult to get that back. We had it before because we weren't allowed in their room. Said, you're not allowed here. So because of that, we said, well, gee, we got to do something here. Let's create our own bank. Let's create our own baseball league. Let's create our own. And then the minute that money started to be made, then they said, you know what? You can come on in here. This way we can keep an eye on you while we make money from you. And we didn't see that.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar published a book that spoke to that and how black basketball team owners mm-hmm. were frozen out, but the players were allowed in.
Mm-hmm.
And had that changed, you'd have owners of billion-dollar franchises today.
Yes.
But they weren't allowed to participate in their that merger that created the NBA today.
Yes.
So there is a strong argument for people trying to create and maintain platforms because it is the source of that power. Yeah. And the same with black media.
Sure.
One by one selling out, or the people who were the best journalists leaving to move on to, you know, jobs that they weren't allowed to have before. Mm-hmm. Whereas they had, I think, a powerful voice to begin with.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting argument that is coming back around full circle.
Sure.
In 2018.
Absolutely.
So with your platform today, the way you reach all these people, you're riding on, is it Roku and so, Apple TV?
Right.
And how do you reach the end user?
Right. So we use the new streaming platforms. So that includes Roku, Fire Stick, smart TVs, Blu-ray players, etc. That is the future of television. Like it or not, the broadcast industry is running scared, cable industry is running scared, and if you do a Google search on that, you'll see. I recently attended a tech seminar where there were all of these industry executives from large television networks that we're all familiar with, but they're kind of stuck in the old technology because they've got millions and millions of dollars invested in it. They can't really back out of it because they need that equipment to broadcast over the air. So they can't really afford to drop all of that just to start streaming. It would just be a nightmare.
Right.
What about all the antennas? What about all the transmitters? It would just be a nightmare. But us, we're lean. Do you follow what I'm saying? We can get in,
flexible,
embrace
lean.
That. Yes. Uh-huh. Embrace that technology and move forward. And that's what we've done. To become the largest black streaming network. Now, what was interesting was at this meeting, at this conference, you had us, you had the largest Caribbean channel, you had the largest Latino channel, all in one at one table. And all of these broadcasters from all of the major networks sitting there to try to figure out, how do you guys do it? Because they're still using rocks and sticks and horses, and we're driving Ferraris. So when I suggested one of the ways you can do that is to partner. Throw $20, $30 million into each of our companies. Let's grow from there. Of course, there were crickets in the room at that time. Right?
Of course.
Right. But it's interesting because if you own a broadcast channel, you need antennas, you need transmitters,
right.
You need somebody to maintain those, you need those things, they have to be kept up, you need redundancy if one goes down, you can't, you know, right. You've got the FCC all over you, you've got a lot of things to contend with,
right.
Just to stay on the air, and the costs are staggering. So here comes a person with some new technology who has none of those boundaries. He can get going really quick, and he can disrupt the market, and that's what's happening.
So a user that wants to consume your content, they just need to go get a Roku,
yes,
internet, plug it in, and then how do they get to BOP TV?
So they would go to streaming channels,
okay,
on their Roku device, and then go to channel search.
Okay.
Start popping up, typing in the word black. When you do that, there's not too much when you type in the word black. So you'll see it, no question, right? And we'll be on there at that point. So
okay.
The growth of Roku is actually nothing but astonishing. It has been revealed this week that Roku is the number three. If Roku was a cable company, that the only two people that would be ahead of them is Comcast and AT&T. They would be the third biggest cable company in terms of sheer numbers of subscribers and the amount of people that watch. That's right. Powerful.
That is huge.
All right. And for a company that's kind of brand new,
mm-hmm,
because people don't want to pay that cable bill. And they're tired of seeing the same thing. So you have 150 channels, but there's nothing on because everything that's on is not really for you. When I go to buy videos, I look for African-American films because I want to support them, right? I want my dollar to support them, and I want to see stories that reflect people that look like me. I want that. And I want, so if I have kids, I want them to see that. I want them to see those images. It's very important.
How does the relationship with Roku work? Their growth Does that help your growth? Are they able to funnel?
It helps our growth because the more people that watch, that buy a Roku device, have access to Black on Purpose television.
Okay.
Much in the way, if you have a television antenna and you hook it up, the more people have an antenna connected to their TV, the more people can watch TV. I just have to get them to watch Black on Purpose, just like some other channel has to drive traffic that way as well.
So what are your strategies for doing that? Because Roku now is giving you millions of potential fish in that barrel.
Yes.
How do you get those fish out the barrel and so, onto Black on Purpose TV?
So Roku and none of the providers, whether it be Vizio, Toshiba, any of those television manufacturers, when you sign up for the service, they don't give us the names. You had, you know, 500,000 people sign up. Here's all their email addresses. No, they don't do that.
Right.
They maintain all those email addresses, which belongs to them, even though those are some of your customers as well.
Right.
Right. So what we have to do, and this is all the channels, we have to in some way find those viewers, get them to go to our website, right? Get them to engage with us so we can begin to capture those emails. So that's really important.
And are you driving that when they're consuming the content? Are you marketing to them? Are you using social media to get those eyeballs to switch? What are your
social media?
Okay.
Social media has been the main focus. We're expecting we're going to do a Series A and A round of funding soon, but prior to that, we're going to be doing some really serious advertising out to the public. And although we're based in Atlanta, we're going to make a bulk of that in other cities that have an active growth of content creators. So although Atlanta's very big for film and television, the track record of what's being given out to people of color is poor. So you have this pie, but we're not getting a nice chunk of that pie. We're getting a sliver. Mm-hmm. As far as that goes. In New York, it's a different mindset. In Chicago, it's a different mindset where these kids, they're not restricted by things that were in the past or feel that there's some kind of block, because there's not. If there's a bottle on the table and you know you're going to get whipped every time you go for it, after a while, you just won't go for it, even though nobody's around to tell you. So the coast is clear. For content creators, the coast is clear for artists that want more exposure and for businesses that want to advertise. So if I'm a sister and I said, for example, here we have an African-American laundry detergent company. If they did a commercial and revealed that it was African-American owned, it would not serve them any good. They would have to make the commercial and basically distort it and put different people on it to try to do that, when the opposite doesn't happen, even though we're the biggest consumer, even though we're the biggest viewer. So it's bizarre how we do so many things to allow, we're easy to say, come on in our house, we welcome you, but that's not reciprocal. Come to our table and have dinner, but that's not reciprocal. We don't have the power to change anything related to racism or anything. We don't have the power to do that. However, there's others that do. But in order to do that, you have to give up a piece of the pie, and that's not something that I don't think that they're prepared to do. So rather than constantly ask for acceptance, for approval, we make our own. If we went to a restaurant and they denied us service and said it's because we're Black, we don't serve your kind, we could rant and rave, but one thing's for sure, we're not having dinner. So the job was done. We're not having dinner there. And if they change their mind and say, you know what, come on in, I wouldn't want to eat there. I don't know what's going to be in my food, right? Because the seed has already been planted. It should not be that it takes that kind of thing to happen for us to be self-empowered. Self-empowerment should not come from restrictions that someone has placed on us that say, well, I guess I better get off my butt and be an entrepreneur now. I guess I better get up off my butt and do something now. That shouldn't be the reason.
Reason should be wealth building, community changing, community building.
Absolutely.
All of the above, so that some of the things that plague the community will no longer plague the community because of the level of investment.
And we have to get out of our own way. We have to be willing to see change, to accept change, because if we don't change, for example, in the community where we're getting the school building, there are seniors who I adore, but they're used to seeing a building that has sat empty for 10 years with no change. So if meanwhile gentrification is coming in the front door, not the back door. 2 years ago in the community, you could buy a house for $50,000, 2-3 years ago. Now it's $178,000. But instead of fighting that by pooling resources and buying property, we're fighting this little guy that wants to take a school building and turn it into a television studio and training center in an underserved community. It's ridiculous. We're tripping over ourselves. Right. We're in our own way. And it affects all of us. So
in terms of players in the market like a Netflix, one of the things they did was create content, their own content, that drew more eyeballs. Tell us a little bit about the channels that you have on Black on Purpose TV and how those are drawing eyeballs and what your future is. Are you going to reach out to the likes of, say, a Spike Lee to have them create a channel on BOP or other names like that to bring in more of those eyeballs to make the marketing easier?
Okay, so I think that the goal of the network is not to be part of the mainstream, but to create a new mainstream opportunity. A mainstream opportunity to create the new Spike Lees,
okay,
the new Robert Townsends, the new whoever you want to say, right? And give people a secondary, an alternative viewing experience that is not less than, it's equal to, but different. So rather than, so you've got all these people that are trying to get on mainstream television, but there's only so many seats at the table. Instead, we create a new table and we allow people to dine at our table. And our table has new people that are our stars. So mainstream has their stars and we have our stars. And the two do not meet. So you do not see Fresh Prince, The Jeffersons, Good Times, Martin, you know, that's the typical stuff that you can see several times a day. But there are new content creators. There are people young and old with new ideas that want to create their shows, talk shows, documentaries that have a story to tell. And so if that door is closed all the time and they only let, okay, I'm going to let two in, but there's 2,500 people online, they need an outlet.
So you're letting in any of these content creators, be they domestic or international,
mm-hmm,
that want to speak to any walk of life. If they want to have a dance channel, a talk channel, or documentaries, you let them find the channel within Black on Purpose TV that relates to their content, and they can try to make money off of it.
Well, actually, there are some restrictions. The theme of the network is positive images of people of color without negative stereotypes. So there's certain kinds of content not allowed. Two of the most important rules are they cannot be offensive to women, and they cannot promote behavior that would probably put you in jail. The content, it's not like YouTube where you can put anything up there. So the material is viewed and checked thoroughly to make sure that it meets what our criteria is. And so, almost like a radio station, you have a radio station that plays classical music. You can't come there with a rock and roll record, because that's not what they do. Right. Same thing with us.
How many channels do you have now?
16 right now. We are in a process of changing the website, expanding, and going to 24 channels. We have a pending deal that may go through with a major telecom company that would like to partner with us. So we're waiting to see how that's going to go. We began talks and they broke down because I place a high value on this because I know it's needed, I know it's necessary. And this is not a company that is destined to be sold out. This is a business that is to have a legacy. So NBC has been around since radio and went into television. I expect that same kind of legacy from Black on Purpose Television. Many people ask me, why do you have Black on Purpose Television? Why do you call it that? You would get mad if I called it my channel White on Purpose. And my response is, you already have that. It's called NBC, CBS, ABC, all the rest.
So tell us about the future. We got a good sense now of the business, your mission, your type of content, the channels, 16 channels. So that's a lot of variety for people all over to consume. You got viewers domestically. I think the majority at one point you told me were international.
Yes.
Viewers of the network. What's the future? Where do you go from here?
So an expansion to 24 channels. Our business model is to take schools in underserved communities, former school buildings, turn them into television studios and training centers. So like you have NBC New York, ABC Chicago, etc. You have BOP TV New York, BOP TV Houston, whatever, right? So think about this. Let's say we're in 10 cities, New York, DC, Houston, Atlanta, and all of those people are creating content in our studio, training and spitting it out on our own network. They don't have to shop it. They create it and they put it out. That's a lot of content very quickly. But content that empowers them, content that is powerful and truthful content, because that's what we need. Because if we have a son or a daughter, we need them to see images that are going to make them feel good about themselves so they can become productive entrepreneurs, productive citizens.
That model is exciting. I know where I'm from, small town in Alabama. There's a studio that they built a long time ago and then upgraded it, and it's sitting empty right now.
Wow.
Not being utilized.
We got to talk about that place.
Got some here in Atlanta.
Yes.
I was at a meeting and found out there are schools that have facilities that are going underutilized, which make for great opportunities to create these bureaus
right.
that can feed in content to a platform like
so,
yours. Well, tell the audience, and I want to break this down into a couple, because you got a lot of people who are going to probably want to get in contact with you. Content creators hearing that there's an outlet.
Mm-hmm.
People like me who went out and bought Roku boxes after I learned about your platform. How do these people find you? How do they find the website? And learn more about what you're doing.
So they can visit blackonpurposetv.com, boptv.com, blackonpurpose.com. We're easy to find, and there's a process for submitting content. I'm excited about the new website that's coming up, but we're working with the old one, and you just click on the information and certainly become a part of and become active in the Black on Purpose television experience.
And then you mentioned a series one or series A. Will the public be able to participate in that? Or is
yes.
that going to be on the website as well?
No, but they can reach out to us if they're interested in investing. We're also doing original content as well. So we're doing our own shows. And we'd like to have more news, more talk shows, more original content. Because it's about, we have people like Susie Orman that talk about finance. We need our own expert to talk about finance as it relates to people of color, mm-hmm. wealth building as it relates to them, and other subjects.
Right.
We need our own experts, and that's what Black on Purpose Television brings. The ability for people to become a brand and to grow through their expertise and share that with the community. And help their growth.
Perfect. And all of those people should reach out to you through those.
BlackOnPurposeTV.com.
Perfect. Well, we will put all that in the show notes. Thank you again, sir, for giving me the time to talk to you about Black on Purpose TV.
Thank you.
And we will continue to follow your success and push for your success, because it is necessary and is needed to help with the programming of young minds.
I hope that we can have a discussion about your show on Black on Purpose.
Well, I'd love to do that.
All right.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, this has been the Guerrillapreneur Podcast. Guys, please get to that website. Get to Black on Purpose TV if you are a viewer, if you are a content creator, if you are an investor. Get in early. I always say buy low, sell high. Well, you are at the front of a movement that's going to change the way people think about content, about black programming and about the future of black digital commerce. You're on the front end. So get over, check that out. And if you got the acting bug, submit some stuff. Let's see if you can build your own brand.
Guys, thank you for listening to episode 32 of Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. I also want to thank Michael Campbell for coming on and telling us exactly how he's building his Guerrillapreneur business, leveraging the platforms that are out there today like Roku and Apple and reaching millions and not having to spend that much to get to them. He's the largest streaming black-owned television service in the world. He has 16 channels, moving to 24, and is only getting bigger. That's how you defeat the corporate giant. Michael is out there breaking something, the traditional business model, and the trends are in his favor. Black millennials and black women are consuming more streaming content than any other group on the planet, and they're buying what they see on TV. Michael's moving where the puck is going, and you need to be there with him. Remember to support the show. Go to patreon.com/guerrillapreneur and donate. If you can't donate money, you can go to iTunes or Podomatic and subscribe and like the show and leave your comments. Share the love and share the show. Guerrillapreneurs, Scott Sullivan said it best in episode 7. Be a mace, sharpen those spikes, and remember, if you're not breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken.
Thank you for listening to the Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, Guerrillapreneurs!